Happy Movie Chatter Day. Welcome to another episode of Movie Chatter. I'm Eric. I'm joined tonight by my two co-hosts, Lou and Robin. Lou, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing great.
Awesome. Robin, how are you doing?
I'm super fantastic. Bubble elastic. What was that? What was that phrase?
I'm already super confused.
Fantastic bubble
I
elastic.
Do not know.
Is that an I'm old doing... person joke, Lou?
Yeah.
Supercalifragilistic.
Expialidocious. If you know how to spell it, you'll always sound atrocious.
There you go.
Oh, no,
no, I'm doing really good.
Good. Excellent. I'm doing okay. I just woke up. I worked a night shift. I set an alarm for like 2 or 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Except afternoon is not AM. So when you flip flop every few days between day shift and night shift, 13 hour shifts, you're brain just loses that it. So I woke up like an hour ago. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's rough. Found another job to check out that looked really good. And it's a contract job for 1 year. And I'm like, job security is kind of nice too, especially in the pandemic. So keep looking. But anyway, we are here to discuss movies. Specifically, we are continuing our pseudo horror movie coverage for Halloween. And today we are going to be talking Happy Death Day and maybe possibly a little bit about the sequel, too. So first of all,
oh, I hope so.
OK, well, I didn't know if you guys had both watched it because we had decided to watch Happy Death Day. And we told you guys out there to watch Happy Death Day to prepare for the episode. But we didn't really discuss Happy Death Day to You, which is the sequel. And Lou, you had recommended we watch that too. I did. Robin, did you watch the sequel as well?
Absolutely.
Okay. So we
I
will
do whatever Lou tells me to.
We will try to maybe not spoil this.
No.
That explains a lot. We will try to not spoil the sequel as much. And as we get closer to the end of the episode, we'll throw in another couple spoiler warnings maybe.
We'll hold it off till the end, but.
Right, because we know we warned you guys to watch Happy Death Day, and we think this, well, we may or may not think the sequel is worth recommending, and so if we do recommend it, obviously we don't want to spoil it for you before you get to watch it, so we'll kind of dance around that topic near the end of the episode, but Lou.
Yes.
What did you think of Happy Death Day?
I did not have high expectations going in. It looked like a typical, you know, young adult kind of horror movie that's not really horror, that's got, you know, more stuff going on, but but I was pleasantly surprised. I thought the movie was well put together. It made me kind of warm and fuzzy because it had the whole Groundhog Day feel to it,
right?
Which was a great movie, and I love the movie, and I love Bill Murray, so you know, it was good.
And
I thought that the actress did a great job in that role. She ran the gamut from, you know, what she started out as being a, you know, one of the, you know, in
girls
that, Mean Girls, that was just, you know, she played the role really well. And then she went through the whole thing of frustrated to worried to just I'm done with it type thing. And I believed every stage of her transformation.
Yeah.
So
I should have pointed.
I was happy.
Good. I should have pointed this out. The summary, according to IMDb, a college student must relive the day of her murder over and over again in a loop that will end only when she discovers her killer's identity. So as you said, Lou, it's kind of a Groundhog Day meets horror movie, meets almost murder mystery to some extent. I actually saw it in the theaters when it came out. I think I had just gotten MoviePass, for those who remember what MoviePass was. It wasn't that long ago, but I had just gotten MoviePass, and I think it was the first movie I saw with MoviePass. I figured, yeah, it's a free movie, free ticket, so why not go? I agree with you, Lou. I was pleasantly surprised. I thought it was a lot better than I thought it would be going into it. Robin, what did you think of Happy Death Day?
You know, this is not my kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
Has never been my kind of movie. I watched it because my partner, the love of my life, the man I live with, had
neither of us two, just to clarify to everybody.
Same person. You know, said, you know, settle in, baby, let's catch this flick. And I found myself intrigued by it. It wasn't scary enough to send me screaming away, you know, like this evening when he put on Misery, and I looked at him and I said, really? Like, you don't want to sleep tonight? And so he turned it off.
I'm really curious as to why Tim decided to watch Happy Death Day. What got that on his radar? I'm very curious.
I don't know. I don't know either.
We will have to ask
him. I watched it and then it became a thing. I agree with Lou. The actress carried the day. And I'm going to say it's not the acting. It's the actress. Right? I mean, it could be her and the acting, but clearly the writing was pretty, I don't know, lockstep, something you would maybe expect, but she heightened it. And I like the supporting cast. I like the supporting cast a lot as well. Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go over some of the metadata here to just talk a little bit about the movie. And then I want to come back to that. We don't really talk about the writing as often as we do other aspects of some of the movies we discuss. And I want to come back to that as well. I agree with you. The actress, Jessica Rothe, did really, really well. I mean, she definitely carried the movie. And like you said, Lou, she went through the whole range of emotions and responses to what was going on in a very believable way. I thought she did wonderfully. This was kind of her breakout role, too. She was also in La La Land and most recently Utopia, which is a streaming series that just popped up on Amazon Prime last month. I think last month. And she's one of the lead characters in that as well. Israel Broussard, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, that was Carter, the guy whose room she wakes up in. He was in The Bling Ring and two episodes of Fear the Walking Dead. So the actors in this movie are mostly unknown. This was one of the earlier Blumhouse releases. In fact, I think this movie is really what kind of tuned me into Blumhouse. There was this and then there was Get Out. And then I started realizing, hey, there's some other good movies that have a lot of word of mouth about them that's positive coming out of Blumhouse Studios. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what put me on the radar for this. This came out October 13, 2017. It got a 6.6 rating on IMDb. Rotten Tomato has it at 71% for the critic score and 66% for the audience score, which I have to say for a horror movie is not bad. When you look at a lot of horror movies and non-Marvel genre movies, like sci-fi movies, they typically don't score up in the 80s and 90s very often. So the writer was Scott Lobdell. I'm going to come back to him in a moment. The director was Christopher Landon. And I think he's best known for the Paranormal Activity series. He wrote all except the first one, I think. And he directed Paranormal Activity, The Marked Ones. I've only seen the first, maybe second one of Paranormal Activity. It was okay. And then Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse. So, but Scott Lobdell, Lou, I don't know if you would have any idea who this is or not.
It doesn't ring a bell.
Saw the name and it did ring a bell for me and I couldn't place it because I'm like, what other movies has he written? I know the name, though. And I know that it's a name that I had respected for some reason. He wrote a lot of the X-Men comic books through the 90s when the X-Men were at the height of their popularity. You had Chris Claremont and Scott Lobdell. I think he was the writer on the Uncanny X-Men. And then Chris Claremont wrote the X-Men back when they split off into two different titles. So he was really at the pinnacle of the X-Men popularity. He started Generation X, which was a spinoff covering kind of teenage mutants that like their powers were really not as useful. They're almost more traumatic than they were anything else. And it was kind of a really dark comic book. Really good stuff, though, and great character design, well written. And so I had to kind of sit and process that a little bit. And I think that this was a good fit. And I want to go back to the writing in this for just a moment. You've got a typical slasher horror movie introducing an element like Groundhog Day and a character who goes through a lot of character change throughout the film. And you get to see it happening. It's not just told to you. And she's investigating her own murder. Mm-hmm. And she has agency. She is, I love horror movies where instead of just people running away from the slasher for 90 minutes, they do something. They interact, they fight back. And I think this movie did a really good job of taking that trope and kind of turning it on its head a little bit. And we get to watch her go through and kind of investigate her own murder, but then also kind of try to not get killed again for at least part of it. And then try to work. You see her working things through in her brain a little bit to try to figure out, how do I use the mechanics of this situation to my advantage to then try to break out of this situation?
Yeah.
I thought the writing for what it was brilliant. I mean, we're not talking Academy Award here, but for this type of film, I think that this did a really good job of turning it on its head.
It was definitely more clever than I thought it was going to be.
Clever is a really good word, I think.
You know, I was going into this expecting, like I said earlier, not much, you know, just it was going to be a slasher film, but not really a gory slasher film. Maybe a few comedic moments here and there, but overall just a, you know, ho-hum movie. But, you know, I got done with this and I was like, I want to see the sequel now. I mean, they're both out, so let me just binge it and watch them both. They did it both the same night.
Oh, okay.
Which was, you know, knowing the end of the premise of the sequel, that was probably a really good way to do it.
Yeah, it works good seeing them all in one shot too. And, you know, and I'll say this, we're not going to spoil the second movie, but we'll talk about this more at the end. But, you know, I was expecting, okay, even just from the name, you know, Happy Death Day to You, with the, you know, numeral two and a letter U, like, okay, I'm not expecting much out of this.
Right.
Because
it doesn't, they've already dumbed it down just in the title.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I thought they did a great job twisting the story and not giving me another 90 minutes of the same stuff we saw before.
It was almost a different genre. Not
it was
fully.
Unique. It was different. It was, I was like, wow, this is really good. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
it got a little bit more science fictiony and a little bit less slasher.
Yep.
And it really brought the story to a different level too. So now your investment in the main character and how are they going to get through this? It's not the same cat and mouse game that the first one was. Now it's like, oh, shoot, they've got to get all of these pieces in place because of all this quantum field entanglement, blah, blah, blah. And it doesn't look like it's going to work out. And how does the character choose whether to, we'll get to it later, but whether to stay or to go and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, it really redefined the story. And yet it continued literally from the very end of the first movie. Like, no time has passed. You are watching that same last scene from a different character's perspective, and it just rolls into that, the rest of that day.
Yeah. It was very similar to another horror franchise, Halloween, in the fact that, you know, the second movie picks up right where the first movie stopped.
Yeah. I agree with that. Cause I assume that's what happened. Cause I haven't seen the Halloween movies, cause I'm not a horror fan, but this movie I liked. So
I don't think that this movie was horror, honestly. There's a couple of jump scares and, you know, but nothing that you didn't anticipate.
Well, which, I mean, is good because it didn't make it about the anticipation. It wasn't like you could predict certain things that were going to happen, but it made it okay because it didn't rely on that element. It relied on these other elements. That was where the mystery was about what was going on. So it was, there were certain deaths that were obvious, but it wasn't about whether the character is going to die. They took that away from you. Said, yeah, she's going to die. She's going to die over and over again. Don't worry about that part.
Right. Right.
So yeah, is it a horror movie? It kind of technically qualifies, right? There's stabbing and people falling off of things and, you know, there's murder. It wasn't really gory. And there were some jump scares, but they were almost more like, you know, it's the cat walking out from behind the bookshelf or something sort of thing.
You probably had more horror, more scariness in the first third of the movie than you did anywhere else. So you had the sequences where the person in the mask, that stupid baby head mascot for the college. And that'd be enough for me not to go to that college to begin with. But
right? Exactly.
I kept thinking, like, in my second viewing recently, like, what school, what student body would get together and decide they want to be called babies?
Exactly. Yeah.
But honestly, that was the most horror part of it, was the stupid mask.
Yeah, right. But, you know, so IMDb bills this as a horror mystery thriller. And after the first, say, 20 minutes to 45 minutes of this movie, it became a thriller and a mystery, not horror anymore.
Right.
The first, you know, half hour, I'd say, was probably horror-esque.
Yeah. Well, and it definitely started to lead you down that path intentionally, and then kind of steered you away from it and said, what if it's not really a horror movie? What if we can take this and control what's going on and give the character some agency and let her make decisions that affect what's, you know, let her affect her own outcome.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So remind me again, what was, so I'm always concerned about the mechanism for the day restart.
Okay.
So we knew about the mechanism for the day restart in, Live, Die, Repeat, Edge of Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Whichever you want to call it. Even the filmmakers couldn't decide.
I don't remember the mechanism behind Groundhog Day.
It was a more philosophical mechanism. It was when he changes enough to actually get her to fall in love with him.
Right. And so one might assume that this had sort of the same mechanism in the first movie. Right. And it's not until the second movie that we get more realization about the mechanism of the reset or repeat. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that to me was where its brilliance was, is the mechanism got resolved and revealed itself, unlike in others that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But
that's satisfying.
It didn't become, I mean, the second movie kind of became about the mechanism, but even then it was a MacGuffin. It never became about trying to figure out the science. It was much more about, in the second one, even when they give the characters a checklist of, okay, we need to have this happen. It's more about the things falling apart to keep those things from happening. And then the troubleshooting of, okay, how do we fix this in time? How do we make it work? So it was nice to see. I'm glad they kept it what it was in the first movie.
Right.
And didn't get into the science fiction aspect. But then I'm glad that they changed it in the second movie to add that additional layer, because it gave you something entirely new to focus on.
Yeah.
But
I'm under the impression that they didn't go into writing the first one with a plan for the second one at all.
I believe that's correct.
The first one was its own totally self-contained story, and we know what happens and happily ever after, and, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The ending happens and it's plausible. You know what? You understand what happened. The second one picks up. And like I said, I was expecting to be, okay, another 90 minutes worth of the same old story with maybe a new character or something.
Right.
But we picked up the same characters. Something else happens in the very beginning that was going down a different path, and it converted itself back into the same story as the first movie.
Right.
But with a different take on it, because it was a, you know, a different place, we'll say, a different reality, I guess, which made it even more, well, I should say, even less of a horror movie and more interesting, because now you had this whole other aspect going on, and then her decisions of what she's going to do and why she's going to do them weighed heavily on everything that happened.
Yeah.
And yet there was still a lot of comedy in there, like the whole thing of, you know, the guy that she was falling in love with in the first movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is now, you know, I won't spoil it because it was a whole different twist with that one. You're like, oh, damn. You know, that was a good story writing twist.
So I think we can say that in the second movie, what happens is again, it picks up right from the events of the first movie, but from a different perspective. It pops in from the perspective of the roommate of, yeah, so in the first movie, she wakes up in this guy's dorm room, not really sure why she's there, probably from partying too hard the night before. But it's like this really innocent guy, like he didn't take advantage of her or anything. He just helped her get into a bed and sleep it off, and, you know, folded her clothes and put on the nightstand, like, you know, really chivalrous guy and all that. He's got this kind of like doofus roommate that you see on and off throughout the film. Not really a big character in the first movie. Well, in the second movie, you pick up from that character's perspective, and it turns out he's a science student. And yeah, he's kind of a doofus, but he's also brilliant. Yep. And the premise for the second movie changes a little bit in the sense that the experiment, the science experiment that he was working on to try to, to try to slow down time?
Yep.
Or, yeah. Somehow, instead of slowing down time, could cause time to loop around in on itself. And he created, unintentionally, the events of the first film. And when the main character in the first film broke out of that loop, it kind of started a new loop. And yep, the premise changes a little bit. I don't think this is a spoiler because it's revealed very, very early in the film. Like, it's within the first act, that it actually has created multiple different threads in the universe. And so most of the film takes place with the character, the main character from the first movie, but in a parallel universe than where she came from, trying to figure out how to fix things and how to get back to her own universe if she wants to, because, you know, we've got that story thread too. So completely different direction. And I like the fact that they took the characters from the first movie and developed them even more too. In the first movie, a lot of those tangential characters didn't really have a whole lot to do. They were all possible murder suspects, and it was more about, you're only in the head of the lead character and everybody else is a suspect. In the second movie, everybody has a role. I kind of liked that. I liked seeing those characters actually do things and become valuable.
A role in a believable way.
Right.
You know, it would have been boring had it been, you know, lather, rinse, repeat, with all of the characters again living through the "I don't believe you, I don't believe you, you're crazy, blah blah blah."
Right.
Right. So there was this nice spirally revolution. And I must say, the main character finds herself in a Sophie's Choice type of conundrum where no matter what she chooses, she loses. And
kids, you'll have to go ask your parents what Sophie's Choice is.
But I like that she went there without the melodrama. And so again, I'll leave that to the actress's choices in how she was going to bring that character forward. You know, this could have dragged into a long melodrama of should I or shouldn't I type of thing. And it didn't. And that's what was really kind of refreshing about it.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked a lot about what was the lead actress's name here? Jessica Roth.
Jessica Roth.
But I thought the other actors and actresses did pretty well too. And you get to see a little bit more of that in the second film. But, you know, they had, and so I think part of that was, again, both the acting, which probably leads back to the director to give him some credit, but then also the writing, because even these other characters that we see in the second movie, we had a couple of throwaway characters, the other scientist kids, right? They were a little cardboard.
Yeah.
But most of the characters that were in the first movie who showed up in the second movie, they had things going on in their lives. They had, you know, we've got her roommate. There were things that gave her character some depth. We've got the Carter's roommate, the scientist guy. He's got some things that give that some depth.
A lot of depth. Yeah.
It was never the focus of the film, but it was something that I think gave a lot of depth to making it feel real. These characters were real characters. They weren't just cardboard standouts. And you don't often see that in this type of film either. And I really, I have a lot of respect for the writing. And I think that all of the actors and actresses, especially considering, again, these are people that are unknowns. You guys don't know who these people are. I think they did great.
Yeah, I didn't recognize a single name in here or any of the writing staff or none of it, you know, struck any chord with me at all before I saw it.
Yeah. And again, Scott Lobdell is probably the only name that I would have heard of before. And even then, I couldn't place where I'd heard of him because it wasn't in the context of movies. So, Robin, let's talk the director a little bit. You're kind of a very director focused audience member.
Honestly,
any thoughts?
Wasn't even director focused for one second at all.
Okay.
I actually, and I don't know why, because usually that's my go-to, as you all know. Mm-hmm. I really fell in love with the main actress. Her name just left me again.
Roth. Jessica Roth.
Jessica Roth. Her face, her embodiment of who she was there to portray, mm-hmm. and her ability to reflect in a very real way. You know, I found myself seeing myself in a lot of her reflections, like, you know, after she sort of acknowledged this flaw in herself, it carried itself through, like, you know, even in these one little lines saying, you know, yeah, I used to be I used to be awful, right? Or I used to be this. And isn't that amazing isn't that interesting? I used to be this and I don't even know why. Mm-hmm. Right. And those are things that we all do on a daily basis. Like, you know, when you see something awful coming out of your mouth and you just want to grab it back before the other person gets it. Right. It's one of those moments.
Every time I speak.
But I see myself doing that all the time. And it's those moments when you can catch it and bring it to the fore for the people in the room and also for yourself.
Right.
Where you become a real human. And for me, she became a real human each time she encountered herself and engaged herself in that reflective manner. So I didn't go director this time. I went actor.
So let's talk about that. Let's zoom outside of this movie real quick. I've kind of always felt, and I'm not as well educated about directing as you are, but I kind of feel, so you have actors who just deliver good performances no matter what. If you look back at the Star Wars prequels, Ewan McGregor did a great job. Ian McDiarmid did a great job, even though George Lucas is notorious for being more of an mm-hmm. editor's director, not an actor's director. Mm-hmm. And you can see other places where some performances fell kind of flat because there wasn't any guidance from the directors. Even people such as Natalie Portman, who's a great actress, you know, there's a responsibility that the director has to make sure that he pulls good performances out of actors and actresses, and that it's the portrayal that scene needs, because you can deliver a line 15 different ways. So part of it is the actor or actress knowing how best to perform, because there's a responsibility on them to actually deliver a quality performance. But then there's also the director to make sure that it is what's needed for that scene. So there's a symbiosis there to some extent. And when you get performances from an actor that are inconsistent. So what's a good example of this? Oh, The Butterfly Effect. Ashton Kutcher.
Oh, yeah.
Not a great movie, but there were some moments in that movie where he gave just unbelievably good performances. And then there were others where a high school student could have done it. And I kind of feel like that's the director's failing for not having that level of consistent performance. But then when you get consistent performance out of an actor and then consistent performance out of another actor and another actor across the board. I thought the performances were consistent. I have to give some kind of credit to the director because I feel like even if this wasn't some really, you know, artsy film or something where the way shots were framed really added a lot to the artistic merit of this piece, I think that the consistency across the board from a bunch of unknown actors and actresses, probably with limited experience, the director's got to share some of the credit there, right?
Oh, definitely. Sure. And we've talked about this before. I mean, there are some actors that don't need a lot of direction to get a great performance. Mm-hmm. And that's very few and far in between. Most actors need something. Even good actors need a strong director to carry a lot of the scenes.
Right.
There's very few that can just do it without that kind of direction. But in this case here, where they're all such young actors and such, you know, unknowns, I got to put a lot of that emphasis on the director because, you know, they're finding their feet and they don't really know what they're doing. And they got to grow, and somebody like a good director can really bring that out of them. And I think this is a clear case of that.
Yeah. I have to,
so for me, there's a difference here. There's mm-hmm. there's directors who engage directly with their actors and, like you said, pull their vision out of them. I feel like this director was a little bit more like a conductor. You know? He was there in front of an ensemble who knew what they were there to do. And he got that, right? He sort of conducted that symphony. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you why I think that. And maybe it's because the acting was just solid across the board, or maybe it's because, you know, obviously in the sequel, they had all worked together previously, so it's not that difficult. And you knew who the newbies were because they delivered newbie performances.
True.
They didn't necessarily have that interrelation relatedness going.
You know, the other thing I was going to say was that, and I just thought that's why you were talking, Robin. Especially in the first movie, you think about how many things they have to film, right? How many scenes you're doing. If it was a regular movie, you'd have all those scenes. This one, maybe you cut them down by a third because while the scenes are done differently, you're doing the same scene like four times.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're getting different performance out, but it's got to feel more comfortable and more familiar if you've done the same scene variation wise, you know, four times already. I got to think that's got to play into it somehow in this.
And I think that, so again, especially in the first movie, that scene where she wakes up in the dorm room and she walks out into the courtyard and all that. And then every time she dies, we go through that scene again, both the scene in the dorm room and the scene in the courtyard. I have to think that's a little trickier than people give the director credit for, because you have to, it's obviously going to change every time, and but you've got to reset all the actors and everything and get something that the differences have to tell part of the story too. Uh-huh. And so you've got to capture the right types of differences and the right focus on those differences at the right times. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's probably more difficult than people realize, because it's not just doing the same. It's the same scene over and over again, but it's not the same scene. The scene evolves. So it's an evolution of that scene the second time, and then an evolution of that scene the third time, where you have to keep in mind the audience knows what happened in the second take and in the first take. And then by the time you get to the sixth or seventh version, you also have to do it in a way that the audience isn't going to get bored, because like you had alluded to earlier, Robin, you don't want to have the, oh, I just woke up and I have to explain it to you for the first time. But for me, it's the 347th time, because it's also the 347th time for the audience.
Right.
So you have to be able to deliver that in a way that it means something to the audience each time when you see that little montage again without them getting bored with it. And I see so many movies where they do this sort of thing and it does get boring. If you think back to Groundhog Day, the scene where he's walking down the street and he meets Ned Ryerson.
Right.
It's funny in part because of who's it? Tobolowsky. I forget the actor's name.
I don't know.
But yeah, in part because of those two great actors being able to play off of each other, but also because that scene continued to evolve and evolve and evolve. It was never the same scene over again. Mm-hmm. And it also didn't linger too long. And this had a danger of really lingering too long through that whole montage and getting up in the dorm room and all the way through the courtyard every time. And he didn't. So I want to give the director credit for that, too. I think it fit. I mean, could it have been tighter in some spots? Probably. I could nitpick away at it. But for the most part, he did a really good job of keeping all of that flowing and moving through what could have broken parts of the film.
Right, right.
I think it's trickier than people realize.
No, I agree. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
So props for that. Anything else we want to talk about? I know this episode's running a little shorter. We want to kind of start, now that we're on YouTube, people don't like watching 4 hour long YouTube episodes. Right, right. So we're trying to keep the shows a little more concise. But before we move on, is there anything else that you guys want to talk about in regards to this?
No, I think my big thing was just in kind of the reason why I was excited to kind of get you guys to watch the second one, because I'm like, I want to talk about that one too.
Uh-huh.
Because they work so well together. I thought it was a great merging of these two movies, especially seeing one after the other. And you know, the changing of that story, but yet keeping the same feel, I thought was brilliant.
And how,
I'm not sure, was it the same writer and director? I didn't even know.
I didn't look that up when I did the show notes because I hadn't watched the second movie when I did the show notes. I'll pull it up here now.
Happy birthday to you. Same writer.
Scott Lobdell.
Same directors. Yep.
Okay. Yep. So I'll go ahead, Robin.
I think after watching the second one, and I'm not sure if we're ready for spoilers here.
Yeah, we should be, because I think we're wrapping up. So
I think that after watching the second one, I think there needed to be the second one in order to make me satisfied with the first one.
When I watched the first one, I didn't feel that, though. I felt like the first one was right. Yeah. But after
it was contained.
Yeah. In hindsight.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I want to say, because I was really glad that Lou brought it up and I was able to watch it, because then I went, oh, now I'm satisfied.
Yeah. I don't want to overhype this series too much, because again, it's not going to win any Academy Awards or anything, but I really think that if you look at horror movie sequels, how often do you get a sequel that, we won't even say whether it's better than or worse than the first, but that it is at least worthy of the first? And you said, Lou, it's so different in theme. It's different in storytelling structure. It's different in character development.
Yep.
And how often do you get something that is such a breakaway from the first and yet takes place? It overlaps that first day of the second movie with the last day of the first movie and just moves right into it without losing literally a second of storytelling time. And yet is so different, but doesn't break the first movie. If you look at the continuity,
right.
It doesn't retcon anything in such a way that breaks anything. The first movie still holds up within the new universe that's created.
Yep.
In the second, like the new canon, it never breaks its own canon anywhere. Even though, like you said, Lou, the first movie, it doesn't look like they had ever planned to do a sequel. And then when they did the sequel, very different, entirely different, like context for things. And yet it didn't break canon at all.
Right, right.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I give him a lot of props for that, because, like I said, I went into that second movie knowing in my own mind it was going to be, another 90 minutes of the same kind of thing, maybe with a different character or something. But, and then when it started out, the first 5 minutes, I'm like, I was right. It's going to be,
The beginning of the second movie worried me.
Okay, great. But then it very quickly changed and morphed into something totally different. I'm like, oh, this is very interesting.
Yeah.
Right. The first 5 minutes of it, I was kind of a little hating on Lou.
Yeah, I agree.
We're
and then
do
the whole
same thing over again with a different character. I'm going to kill him.
Him walking down the sidewalk after he wakes up in his car. I'm like, oh, my gosh. And every little person that walks by in the street, I'm like, oh, they're going to show up again. They're going to show the guy with the coffee drinks. They're going to get spilled, et cetera. And you're like, oh, my gosh. Yep. And they did it one more time and then let it go. Again, just kind of enough to fool you. And then they take you on a totally different roller coaster ride.
Yep.
Yeah, that was good.
So you were redeemed there, Lou. There were no texts. No worries, audience. There was no hate. There was no shade.
There was no hate. Yeah. And of course, you know, I like it because it was, you know, time travel of sorts.
Which is a wonderful subgenre, by the way.
Yes. Yes.
Boys?
Yeah.
Don't make me sigh so late at night.
So
don't wake up the dogs.
Yeah.
We need to decide what to cover next episode.
We do.
There were things I wanted to cover, but again, we have to watch them first, and I haven't gotten a chance to watch very much over the last week or so because my personal life has been just chaos. I did have one suggestion, but it's an older movie, and I don't know if you guys want to cover it. So, Robin, you said as if you had something to contribute. So what do you have?
Well, I'm wondering if we... he put it out there to the folks. I don't know if we have that kind of time though.
Probably not. And I will probably need to start watching whatever we cover probably in the next day or so. So
yeah. Yeah, me too.
One thing. So I've got a list of things I still want to see that came out recently. And in fact, several of them, Blumhouse Studios projects, The Hunt, Fantasy Island, etc., none of which got stellar reviews, but they're all solidly like in the 70% range. But I always wanted
to take a break from Blumhouse,
go back. And there haven't really been any other studios recently that have been putting out horror movies that are also interesting other than being horror.
Right. Right.
So they've kind of cornered the market on more intelligent horror movies recently.
But we're also getting past Halloween, too. So
that's true. Oh, that's a good point. Today's the 27th. You know, does that mean we don't have to cover Halloween anymore? Because it'll be after Halloween by the time we record next.
It will be. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
well, screw that.
Over. Yeah, let's move on.
Hope you enjoyed our horror movie coverage because we're done. Peace out. All right. Well, I think that was a good one to wrap up the horror movie coverage on. Because the other thing, too, like if you're listening to this after Halloween, it's still a good movie to sit down and watch, I think.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be Halloween time.
No.
This didn't, you know, because like you said, it's horror, but not really. It's horror adjacent.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a Christmas movie.
Let's not start the Die Hard thing again. So moving on. I didn't even think of anything to cover that's outside of.
Well, of I got all this that. Great poster as a gift. I put it up there for Eric to comment on, and he artfully ignored that text.
Yeah.
Not only did he ignore that text, he texted around the text as if the text never existed. Mm-hmm. That was like freaking.
Well, but I don't know if you've been keeping up, but like my life has kind of turned upside down recently. So
So there is that we could, you know, sort of a scratch and sniff poster.
Scratch and sniff. And you texted it to me.
It's 100 greatest movies,
so
right?
Confused.
100 greatest.
It was like
movies?
100 greatest bucket list movies. Something like that. Wasn't that what it was?
Oh, geez. Yeah. So it's all like.
So we could watch that.
Shawshank Redemption and. Big Lebowski, 2001. So it's all like that stuff all over again.
It's Eric all movies that are worthy of being seen on for your bucket list type thing, right?
I know a movie we could watch.
No.
Whenever Eric does the whole.
No, it's a new one. It just came out this week, and I guarantee you have access to it.
Kung Pao Fist Chicken did not just come out.
No, it's not fisting it. No, it's Kung Pao Enter the Fist. But no, I was talking about Borat subsequent movie film, delivery of prodigious bride to American regime for benefit one glorious nation of Kazakhstan.
No.
It was really good.
I'm not watching Bucket. I mean,
it wasn't really good. It was Borat. It was. It had some interesting social commentary in it.
I need no more social commentary.
I get enough of that in news.
I would not make you guys watch that. Though there's definitely some stuff in it I'd love to discuss, but I wouldn't put you guys through that.
My poster has a 2001 Space Odyssey.
Oh, I'm sure it does. Probably why I texted around it and didn't. Yeah. I'm scrolling back through my list here of what I've watched recently, and I'm not seeing much in the way of movies.
Streaming or Apple TV or Prime Video. I mean, what? Maybe something new that we.
All right. Well, Robin, what's on the list that you think that we would all actually enjoy?
What list?
Your scratch and sniff poster thing that you were talking about.
I love that poster.
What list? She just talks about this.
I talked about the poster. Everything's on the poster.
Well,
Lou.
I don't have the poster in possession anymore. I gave it to you.
My gosh, yeah, you upstairs. People.
All I cannot right. run away because we're actually recording.
Yeah. So I'm looking through stuff that's...
What's come out recently,
people? That's the thing. Like, I'm looking through like popular rentals and stuff on
I'm looking at something like
Apple, and it's all HBO horror Max, stuff.
New on Amazon Prime, new on Netflix.
All right, let me see.
310 to Yuma is new on Amazon Prime.
It's hard because there's not. We could do 2067 if you've watched it. Lou, is it any good?
I haven't yet, but I'm planning on it. Yeah.
I'm hesitant to recommend something that we haven't actually.
Yeah, it's gotten good reviews, but I don't know.
Ava, I haven't actually watched yet. Yeah, that's the hard part is.
Let's see. What about?
And there's nothing new coming out in theaters right now, and that's what makes it really
tricky. Yeah,
well, not just theaters, definitely. But even like the home streaming stuff. There are things coming out, but not much, and it's all a lot of it's series. It's not really film,
right?
Trending now. Nothing interesting in Netflix's top 10 at the moment.
I've been rewatching The Great British Baking Show, and there was this one tense moment with melting ice cream.
Wow. Maybe we should do a television podcast and help you find better things to watch because. Wow.
I love The Great British Baking Show. You just stop it.
No, melting ice cream. That can be. That can be intense. That sounds like a horror movie right there, really.
Just a little bit.
All right. Well, you know what? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to come up with something offline, and we're going to surprise you.
Ooh.
Maybe we'll post it to our too. Discord server in advance. So, or maybe you've got recommendations on things that we could discuss. What our general criteria is it's got to be relatively easily accessible to people, preferably on some sort of popular streaming service. If people have to like rent it or something, if it's available for rent on Amazon or iTunes or whatever, that would be okay too. And hopefully something that there's some sort of discussion worthy content for. But let us know what you think. And if you can't come up with anything, we will. And we will try to post it in advance of the show in our Discord server. So go to randomchatter.com/Discord. It's free to join. It's free to get the app too. And that will give you, it'll link you right into the invite to the server. And on the server, we have free channels for each one of the shows on the podcast network. So there's a channel right there for Movie Chatter. Drop in, start talking about whatever you want, anything we've talked about on any of the shows, anything you want us to talk about on upcoming shows. That's your easiest way to find us. Now, for the people who donate through Patreon, even if it's just $1 a month, there's a whole nother section of the Discord server that opens up. In fact, the free section is just mainly that one group of the different shows on the network. We've got other multiple groups. We've got entertainment groups that cover general movies and general television and photography and whatever. We've got kind of a life group that covers travel and pets and cooking. We've got a Star Wars group that has, you know, Star Wars books, Star Wars speculation and spoilers, a channel for The Mandalorian. You know, we break it down. We've got one group that's different franchises. So Marvel and DC and Doctor Who and et cetera. There's a lot of stuff in there. So if you've got a spare dollar, you know, find four quarters in your couch cushions or something. I know quarters are kind of a rare, coins are rare these days, right? You could almost sell those on eBay for quite a bit. But, you know, find some spare change and you think that our content's worth a dollar per month, then we would be grateful for that. It helps keep the network up and running. And we really appreciate everybody who helps us out. We really do. But anyway, that's beside the point. randomchatter.com/discord. Join us there. Let us know what you think. And that's going to do it for this episode of Movie Chatter. I think we would all agree that Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to you are good recommendations. Right? Thumbs up?
Absolutely. Yep.
Thumbs up.
10 okay. candles. Ten.
Check that out and let us know what you think of it.
Wow.
When you see it. 10 what?
10 candles. Get it?
No. Happy, is that the 16? But why 10?
I like the number 10.
I thought it was like a 16 candles reference and she just got the number wrong. We're going to have to go back and do more 80s movies at some point too.
Go watch Funny Farm.
It was okay, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I say every year when my husband makes me watch it.
Do you want us to work on that and make you not watch it? We can probably hack away at Tim a little bit and...
We just rewatched it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You don't like it?
Yeah.
My first wife hated Groundhog Day. She would storm out of the house anytime it was on.
I'm a good one.
And it's one of my favorite movies, so that didn't work out well. Anyway, so we will come back at you with what we're going to pick next. And we are going to go back to rotating picks across the hosts. Do we remember whose turn it was?
Not mine.
Does it lose?
I don't know.
Could be. I'm pointing at Eric.
I knew it went Lou, Rob, and Eric, but I don't remember where we were in the cycle. I will look it up. I'll go back and look at the backlog of episodes and find out who's up.
I think if we count Lou as choosing Happy Death Day, which I think I chose.
He suggested we also see the sequel.
Yeah, so then it's really Eric's turn.
There you go. Yeah, you chose one. I chose one. Now, Eric.
There it is.
Okay.
That's my point of Eric.
It's probably not the right order, but that's fine.
We're not going to be watching I will 2001 double check. Space Odyssey, Lou.
Not anytime soon. I promise you that.
As long as we're not watching, Fist Chicken.
Kung Pao.
I'm going to make you guys watch that.
Kung Pao Chicken Fist.
That's not... It's... All right. That's going to do it. Take care, everybody. Check out the rest of our episodes on our YouTube channel, randomchatter.com/YouTube. Remember to subscribe because that helps us out quite a bit. And there's also a little notification thing down there. See, Lou gets it now. You point down to where all the buttons are on the YouTube things. There's a little notification button there, too, that will let you know once new episodes are posted to YouTube. It's a good way to make sure you don't miss anything.
You know, Eric, so I can lean out of this window and reach down. That's what you got to do.
I could set that up, but it would require some more work on your end that I don't know if you want to actually do or not. I can show you how to make that happen.
In the living room. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Take care, everybody.
Okay, you guys. Thanks for listening.